Today is the 17th day of June 2019. I'm interviewing Bruce and Margaret Mackay of Wairoa and also Elizabeth Tong, their daughter. Bruce, would you like to tell us something about the life and times of your family?
Yes, I'm Bruce Mackay. I have a sister, Margaret. There are only two of us in the family. My father, James Norman Mackay, was one of nine children, and he actually took up land in 1929 at Waitangi Station. This was after his father had died and the land was split up by the boys.
Bruce, where was Waitangi Station?
Waitangi Station is 10 miles south of Wairoa on the main road.
Is that before Waihua?
That's correct, right. At the bottom of the Waihua Hill.
And so your great-grandfather managed Pootery?
That's right, he was Murdoch Mackay. He went to Pootery when he was 19 and he managed for Murray Roberts. From there he went to work for Mr. Chambers at Kiwi Station, which is in the Wairoa area, and he managed there until,
not sure the date, Dad, at the moment. It's in here. We'll find it.
It was subdivided into many farms.
Yes, it was subdivided into the farms for Alexander, for Murdoch Gordon, for James Norman in the Wairoa area.
Selwyn,
Robert Selwyn, and also for John Williamson, Jock Mackay of Waikerry. He got Te Kara, which actually was land that his mother owned.
Right,
and
right.
She was a tait from Waikerry.
It must have been a big station at that stage when he was managing it.
Pootery, are you talking about?
Yes, and I had it down that I would have known, but actually, reading his diaries, some of the days from Pootery, he would go on horseback right through to Mangahararuru.
Yes.
That's going more towards the Tutira area on that range was there. And when he left and came to Kiwi, he actually managed for Chambers. And when he took over the property in 1929, he bought from Chambers the land that the boys were settled on, and the only one that wasn't settled, of course, at the time was Alec, that was killed in the war.
So how big were those farms?
The farms would have roughly been round about, well, they varied in sizes, but from 1,800 acres, 1,200 acres, down to 1,000.
The Kiwi station you referred to, does that have any relevance to the Kiwi Road?
Yes, it does. Mm. It is at the end of the Kiwi Road.
So things link everything up.
Yes, after that it was bought by Lane when Murdoch left there, and then I think from there Mulcaster, which is it.
So then the farm was broken up, and your association with Mohaka was after that?
No, that was through Elizabeth Sutherland, was the one that came from Scotland, and they went to Petone, and from Petone they got a block of land and they farmed at Mataikona at Castle Point. And she married James Tate. Elizabeth Sutherland married James Tate. They had four children. James Tate was bringing mail to Wairoa. He had overindulged going home on his horse, and he was drowned just off Potutu Station. And so left her with four children, and the youngest was only 19 days old. So Elizabeth was actually, this is at the time of the Ho-Ho uprising, yeah. And she had these four children that she had to care for, and she took them away in hiding to care for them until the militia from Hawke's Bay was coming through, and that's when no doubt she was met by the militia. And she, in the end, married Mrs. McKinnon's brother, and Mrs. McKinnon was from Awapawanui, and she was a MacIver and had come from Scotland. Okay. And it was her brother that came to her at Awapawanui and met Elizabeth with the four children, and they in time married. And they had another three sons.
Mutu, Donald, Robbie.
That's right. Yes. And they were the MacIvers, and they were the ones that she must have bought the land, and they settled at Mohaka. And there was Ron and Mutu and Donald, three boys.
Because the B family were there at that time.
Yes.
And he was way up the Mungaharu. And he told them if anything happened, if there was an impending assault by Tikuti, he had a cave that they all went in. And yes, that was the time that the 67 were killed.
At Mohaka.
At Mohaka.
Yes.
And another family.
The Lavins. That was 1869 when the Lavins were killed.
Yes. The Murphys had the hotel.
Yes, yeah.
It was shifted back from where it was at the river. It was interesting that no one else in Hawke's Bay knew about it. By the time it reached, it became news, it was not worth talking about.
Yes, that's quite true. Yes. Can I say, before we just move on from that, that we as a family, and Mary Brownlee, which was Mary Tate, and her family, we gathered at Mohaka. We went across the Mohaka River, and we built a cairn there in memory of the Lavins.
Which is still there.
And that cairn is still there. I've been back to it, and it's built of Mohaka stone out the river.
I've stepped right into history and real history. So then, after Puteri was subdivided,
Kiwi was subdivided
for the boys.
Yes, that's right. Did your father have one of those blocks?
Yes.
And that was the block that you farmed.
That's correct.
Forever and a day. And you had the house with the scissor clipped lawn and the beautiful gardens.
But that is where the history comes in. Yes. Again, my father went to the farm at Waitangi. It was originally called Te Matai, and the farm where Murdoch and the family were was Te Māori. And Dad always said that Te Matai was too close for mail, and so he changed the name of the farm to Waitangi, which was the stream that ran down the centre of the farm to the Waihua River.
So you had both sides of the road then?
No.
Mainly the right-hand side of the road, Te Māori, Awaho, and at that time Te Matai, were on the right-hand side going to Napier.
We were all on the right-hand side of the road, but the Te Māori house, which was the one where Colin got and Mary lived, and where they came from Kiwi to go to settle, and the family came around there, that was on the right-hand side by the creek.
So you had a sister?
Yes, one sister.
You grew up?
Yes.
From that house?
No, not to Myrie, from the Waitangi house. Actually, there was no power. We didn't have power there until I was 18 years old. And we actually first started school at Wairoa Primary, and we were picked up by the Sabres taxis, which took us into school. And there was two other Mackay girls, and there were two McKinnon girls that lived down the road. So there were six of us that went to school. And then as the years went on, we changed to the bus and we went to Turi Raw School. And we were there at the time of the war. And there was a Miss Compton and a Mrs. Tansey that were the school teachers there, and she was in the WAFs, I think it was, the Women's Auxiliary Force, a big heavy woman with a voice that matched it, and at the back of the school and down the side, the fathers had dug big trenches, and we used to have to go to those trenches when she blew the whistle and said that it was a raid or an air raid. And as kids, we were quite petrified of this, and we had to lie in the trenches face down with our hands over our ears until she blew the whistle and gave it all clear for us to return back to school. And so my father came to the stage where he was not happy with Miss Compton and her ideas and us, and he didn't think that we were getting anything of a great education. So he decided to send us to Waihua School, which was 3 miles further on, over the Waihua Hill, which was a native school with 26 pupils. And Miss Lomber, Laura Lomber, was the school teacher there at that time, and she married Wickens, who was the postmaster of Wairoa, and she used to come out to school on the bus in the morning that was going south. But actually, in that book you will notice we had no apples. We had no milk that was being delivered to school in the morning. We had no power, and our smoko in the morning, especially in the winter, was a kerosene tin half filled of water on the steel stove. It was one room in the school and was heated, and cocoa was made, and we all went forward and dipped our pannikins into the bucket of cocoa. And
kerosene bucket of cocoa.
Prior to that, we were lined up, the 26 of us, and we had the teacher with a flagon of cod liver oil, and we were given a dessert spoon of cod liver oil every morning, and it was by the same spoon. It was wiped with a piece of paper, and it was you and you and you, and that was our well-being to keep us well and happy.
You look at, yes, so did you go to high school?
Yes, after leaving school, and we rode bikes over the hill, my sister and I, on a metal road, had some huge accidents in those days with the metal road. But we actually, my sister left school and went to Napier Girls High boarding, and I left school, secondary school, and went to Wellington College. And that was our schooling. And then when I left school, I came back to the farm and there was never any thought that I would go to do anything else but to stay on the farm.
And so those days the farm would have been just beef and cattle.
That's right, beef and cattle and lambs, and mainly we farmed at that stage when I had left school. Dad farmed wethers, and they were big mobs of them on the country, and we had black cattle bred, the Angus, and they used to go off as three-year-old bullocks.
What about saying, Dad, about the American soldiers when they were here training?
Now, thank you, Liv. In the years that the Americans came and landed at Mahia, they were training. There were hundreds of them, thousands of them, and they actually all went to Tarawa to fight the Japanese. And our father wouldn't let us bike to school because for 2 days and two nights on the metal road, the trucks just went past incessantly. And we used to go and sit down at our cattle stop at the road and just spend ages down there with not being at school, waving to the soldiers. Yes. And they would throw us chewing gum and candy and anything that they had that they could fire out onto the road. Yes. And I've never forgotten that, because I always think, I wonder how many of those mothers and fathers lost those boys that went to Tarawa. And in many instances, we may have been the last that had seen them out in an area. Yes.
Did you also used to go through the railway tunnel to school?
No, we didn't go to school.
But no. When you were going to school?
Well, no. We used to go through the tunnel, because the tunnel, the Waiura tunnel, was just adjacent to the Waitangi house. Mm-hmm. And if any of my mates and that came, we used to grab those push-me-pull-you jiggers and get on the jigger and go right away up through the tunnel and on the railway line and then come back home again. Yes.
They didn't know when the trains were coming.
So what about sport at school? Did you play rugby or anything?
Rugby at school, didn't play a lot, because in the days when I was at Waiura school, we had no playground.
Yes.
There was nothing that was there. And a lot of tennis, a lot of swimming, and also I learnt the bagpipes.
Did you? And do you still play them?
I've got them there, but I can't do it now. I learnt the chanter from a boy, Thompson, who was a day boy, and I used to meet him at lunchtimes, and he was teaching me the chanter on for the bagpipes.
Yes. And did you ever march in a band?
Down there? No, because I had left and I came back to Waiura, but we certainly had a band in Waiura and kilts and everything. We were all rigged out.
So there's actually a display at the Waiura Museum regarding the Waiura Highland Pipe Band.
It's been disbanded, has it?
Yes, many
it's been
years
disbanded.
Ago.
Yes, everybody's gone, and yes.
Yes, so when you came back, you then started to work on the farm.
I did.
And become a farmer.
Yes.
Did you have any other interests?
Well, at that time, it was difficult just after the war and with the petrol rationing and that sort of thing and the way it was going, and I didn't have a vehicle and the petrol was precious, and so it was one of those things that we could never do.
Dad, just talking about not having a car, when you did get, you brought that truck.
Yes, and then, the old truck and that sort of thing.
And then you were selling it or something, and Nana ended up giving you a loan.
What was
that about?
Well, I had to get a loan off my mother because I'd seen this truck that I wanted to buy, but I'd had one that was pretty old and I'd tried to do it up. and Acme Motors were in Wairoa, and they had a garage, and I drove this old Capital Chev into Acme Motors that was buying and selling at that time, and I pulled it into the side, and the guy was watching me as I was driving in, and I said, I bought the truck in, I wonder if you're interested, because I'm looking to sell it. And with that, the truck lurched and it went into the drain and the front wheel fell off. And he just said, without even a smile on his face, take it away, I'm not even interested. So that was the end of the Capital Chev, and that did go to the knacker's yard.
So what was the truck you bought to replace it?
A National. That was the Capital Chev. Yes. I bought the National Chev, and that was 1928 model.
Is that the one Nana gave you the money for?
Yes, and I had to go to my mother and ask if she'd give me a loan.
How much would that truck have cost those days?
£130. It certainly was 1928. It wasn't new, but it was, yes.
It was new to you.
Yeah.
Where did you meet Margaret?
I have known Margaret since she was 6 years old. Actually, her mother and my aunt, Gladys Mackay, that was Gladys Spence, were very great friends. And my aunt had a boarding house at Moriri called Sunny Bray, and Marg used to go up there with them. And of course, Gladys Spence, being a Mackay, was my father's sister, so she was my auntie as well. And Marg would be there, and that's how we came to meet and know one another. And Marg would have been six or seven, and I would have been about 8 or 9 at that stage.
Mind you, I used to hate him because he used to call me fatty. I'd go home and Dad would say, oh, good time. Yes, but that Bruce Mackay was there and he calls me fatty.
Oh dear. And so it was a long courtship then.
Well, it sort of has been, yes, yes.
Yes, well, we've known one another. Marg had been to Aussie and back, and I would say it was one of those things that meant to happen.
62 coming up in November.
Yeah. 62 years.
So in a place like Wairoa, socialising as a young couple?
Very much so. Our house at Waiputa was, well, it was open to everybody.
Yes.
Anyone and everybody.
There were country dances, no doubt.
Yes.
Every little area had a hall.
It was mostly tennis parties. We sort of had. And when the kids were away at school, Meg went to Iona. And Jamie was at Linda's farm, but we'd have the tennis parties and everybody would bring lunch, or we'd supply the lunch, and have a real day of it.
And also a lot of community involvement with our rural school. Huge amount of family involvement with that.
And Bruce, you started your rugby though when you were 18 or 19?
Yes.
When he got the new truck.
Yeah.
And that truck, I think, sort of, didn't you say it sort of went up all the back roads with the pipe band on the back or footballers on the back, one or the other.
So eventually you took the farm over from your father.
Yes.
What age did he retire at, Bruce?
I was 36, was it, when I took it over?
Might be a bit later.
Yeah, 38.
Mm.
Yes.
And Dad died when he was 82, and he would have been...
You just come back from Canada.
78.
78, 79, when he died, 1979.
And so how big was the farm when you took it over?
1,478 acres.
Did you ever know Sam Stone?
Oh, yes, of course I did. Yes, the great horseman.
And we drove down and we saw all the slips going down the Waihua Valley, hills. Just wouldn't believe that it would ever grow over again.
We never, ever had a fence standing. We were just completely wiped out. Yes. We had not the Piper, what's the other big plane that used to be the single engine? Anyway, sowing the seed and that, the Beaver, but it never really came away well, and it never, we got grass growing, I suppose, over time, but it took an awful long time for the country to respond and to come back again. It was just a huge hiding. It was one of those occasions that when you got up in the morning and you saw it, you just couldn't believe it.
Now, Margaret's going to tell us about her side of the family and her school days.
Hello, I'm Margaret, and I'm the daughter of Sid Gillies and Annie Riddle. And I was born at the Port and lived there until I married Bruce and came through to Wairoa to live. Growing up, I can't really remember very much. We lived next door to Mum's parents. We rented their extra house. Nana was one of those, she was an Australian, and Granddad was born at the Port. But once we were through the gate that went between our two houses, you were safe, because Nana said no child was ever wrong. Yes, so that was my start off in preschool days. But I went to the Port School, and it wasn't a big school at that stage. I think there was only two of us in my class. Ken Puri was the other boy, and from there I went on to Napier Intermediate, which hadn't been open that terribly long. Had 2 years there and loved it, and then went to Napier Girls High School in 1948 I started. And that, of course, was the year of the polio epidemic. And the first 6 weeks we had, what do you call that, home service learning?
Correspondence.
Yes, and that was my start at Napier Girls High School, and went into three special. I don't really know, coming from the Port, why I was called in three special, but it was just a name. I think there were about a dozen commercial girls, and the rest were professional. And I had four wonderful years there at Napier Girls. We seemed to just gel. And we just all had the same thing. We all were good at sports. When I say took part in every sort of sport that was going at school. And we had 4 years there, I did.
You were the sports captain.
Oh, yes, I was.
Girls High.
I was the games captain at Girls High in my fourth year and a prefect. And loved every moment of my year. I remember at the end of my fourth year, I cried because I had to leave school. Dad said I could go back, and Mum said she was sick of wearing mended stockings. So Margaret had to go and get a job, so which I did. And I went, had the appointment with Wood, Sorrell and Dobson, solicitors in town. And anyhow, that was for 4:30 or 4:45 or something. And we had cricket practice that day. And Margaret decided that she left it a bit late to get herself tidied up and run down Shakespeare Road and go for my interview. Anyhow, I got the job, and I stayed there until I married Bruce in 1957.
Now, there's something you missed out telling us. The school that you met this boy at.
No, it was all...
They met at Moree.
Yes, Mum used to take me up to Gladdy Spencer's at Moree, right from, before I was even 5, we used to go.
Yes, that's where I mentioned that it was Gladdy Spence, and she was my father's sister.
Of course,
she was Gladdy Mackay.
And I think I went up right until about my second or third year at high school, I went up for my 6 weeks holiday. Every Christmas, I used to have Christmas, and I came to Mackay's for a Christmas dinner. Colin Mackay's and Mary, not so much your people, because you had all your rollings there. Yes, that's just sort of the way. And 6 weeks, she had the boarding house, and I used to come up on the rail car.
So where was the boarding house?
They shifted it because the road went through. Just
do you know Possum Bend?
Yes,
interrupting.
Yes.
Well, there's an old home there on Possum Bend, and that was the house that Gladdy owned, but it was up
further
on
up
the
they
hill.
Shifted it down.
And they brought it down
when they put
to the
road
flat.
Through.
Well, she had, didn't she? What was it, a Chev car? Three-seater?
Three-seater.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
And whenever we went anywhere, came to town to wire or whatever, if there was a crowd of us, kids would all be in the boot with the... Yeah.
Dickie seat.
No, not
oh, Dickie. No Dickie seat, the back held up by battens. And you all had to sit in the back with blankets over you on the dusty road. Yeah. You wouldn't even get away with it now, and, no way.
And while I was, I think I must have been about 3 or 4 or 5 or something, but we used to go away with Gladys for holidays, and my place was across the back window. There was Gladys driving, Mum on the passenger side, and Molly, Gladys' daughter, was in the middle because she was older than me, and I lay across the back until I got too big to do that.
Did you ever go to Mahia for holidays?
No, I didn't.
Not at that time, but no. We did go at Morley, and we were there. Would you know the Tates? Mary and Gordon Tate that lived across the river on the swing bridge.
That's probably where I've heard the name Tate mentioned.
Yeah, well, they were part of the Tates from Waikerry, and he purchased land up there at, what's the big hill at Moreti?
Bartlett's.
No, Maori Hill. It's the big one with the limestone and all the rest of it that's down there. Well, anyway, that's where his farm ran off, and it ran right out to the Nuhaka River Road. What did I say?
No, it wasn't the Foriratas. It was at Nuhaka.
But Gladys' house was on the hill. It was something that I'll always remember. We'd come home from somewhere and she'd let one of the kids out at the corner, because it was a terrible corner, wasn't it? And she'd park over here and you'd have to run across the road and open the gate so she could... And then you'd say, you know, it's all clear, and she would drive in and she'd go just through the gate slowly. And you went up a hill like this to her car shed, which was Manuka, sides and back. And over the end of the back was that cliff.
Yes.
So you had to close the gate, run like hell to follow her up the road as she was going up the hill to the car shed. And she had a block of wood, and she sat with a foot on the brake until you put the block of wood behind the car. And at the end of that car shed was this bluff, so that if she went too far, she was a goner.
My job, whilst I was there, we collected firewood and all that sort of thing. I used to have to get up in the morning and milk the cow, and I used to have to wear Gladys' old sack apron because the cow wouldn't know you if you were there. And I would milk the cow in the old sack apron, get the wood in to light the fire, which she was a great one on lighting the fire, and empty. I was the night cart man. Go in the neighbour's place, take the shovel, dig the hole and bury everything, and it was just over Gladys' fence. So he had all of that in his paddock. Whether he knew it or not, I don't know.
But the guests had a flush toilet, but all us kids, whoever was staying there, she always had oodles of kids there, didn't she? But we all had jobs, and it was during the war, I can remember. You always had to do something, even if you only had to walk all the way around to Mowry Store to see if the mail was there, if there was any mail, or she wanted a half pound of butter. Yes. You had to do it, and then on your way back you could have a swim, but imagine, not until you'd been to the store. Imagine going all that way walking for just that small whatever, but you had to do it. But we all learned to swim in the Mowry baths, or I did anyway.
Yes, we all did.
But we spent a lot of time at Mahia because Mum had a batch out there.
I was left a house, my grandparents, dad's parents or dad's mother, left me a house at West Shore. Dad had the life rent of it, and she died, I think, when I was about 12 or 13. And anyhow, he sold it and bought this place at Mahia. And I think it was just after decimal currency came in, because we bought $3,200-something for the West Shore place. And we paid, or was it the other way around, more for West Shore, about $2,500 more for the West Shore place than here, than we bought at Mahia. But it was just an old, somebody from Hastings owned it. He was a returned serviceman, wasn't he?
He was from the Clive Hotel, and he had one leg. I can always remember him. He had one leg and he was at the Clive Hotel.
But those were in the days where, you know, there was only, how many batches out there?
It was just a little seaside
village. And it was fabulous. No, it was great.
We had that for about 44 years, didn't we? And Meg and Brownie had gone, left Wairoa, and Lib and Wayne had the yacht and they used to go to the lake. And anyhow, it was sort of really of no use. Bruce always thought he was the gardener. Every time he went out there, he had to mow the lawns, and the lawnmower wouldn't start, or something would go wrong.
Well, we need to talk about your children now.
Yes. Do you want the truth?
And grandchildren. Yes, I do.
I've got a brother, Campbell, who lives in Taradale, Campbell Gillies, and he is with Marg Wheatley at the moment. And they've been together for quite a few years, and Dad always said that I was born 5 years after they were married, and he always said I was their love child, and Campbell was born 6 years later during the war, and he was the war effort.
Now, I've interviewed Basil Wheatley.
Basil was Mark's husband. I bet you're in a mess.
No. In fact, do you know, this is the most exciting thing I've done. Do you know why? It's about people.
Yes.
Because we never stop to talk about our yesterdays.
And no, we don't.
So Dad was born at West Shore, and his father was Duncan Gillies, and they were Scots, of course, and he'd married Maggie Nicholson. And she, at one stage, I think, was the postmistress at West Shore, I think. And Granddad Gillies had Piper and Co., which was sailmakers and whatnot, canvas people and whatnot there at the port. And Piper and Co. still going, though well and truly not in the family. But we just wish sometimes we go past and see Piper and Co. and wish we still had it.
Had our names on it.
But yes, that was virtually them. I didn't ever know Granddad Gillies, but Nana Gillies I knew. And yes, I think I was about 14 or something when Dada died, Nana Gillies died. And Dad had Neil Gillies, was a brother, the oldest brother. Arva, Auntie Sue. Kirkham from Eskdale was a sister. And Rhoda Mackay, Bruce's auntie and my auntie, is a sister. And Ian, he was the youngest brother. But Ian died of asthma just sort of during the war, after the war. Yes, I can't remember now. But that was Dad's family. And Nana was a terrific Scot and spoke Gaelic fluently. And as Dad said, when all the family were together, there was no English to be spoken. It was only Gaelic around the table. And Uncle Neil, when he started at West Shore School, I don't think he'd speak English very well, because he was the oldest boy and he was the one that used to have to learn the Gaelic. And I know at one stage the Education Board were going to close the West Shore School and send them over to the port, which they did at one stage. And Mum's father was the chairman of the port school at that stage. And of course the West Shore School was closed. And Nana Gillies went to the meeting and dressed everybody down in Gaelic and stamped her feet as she could do when she became very agitated. And anyhow, yes, and I know it was quite a thing with the Riddles and the Gillies, you know, that the West Shore School was closed and they had to go all the way over to the port school. But no, it was good days growing up at the port.
And you mentioned sailing.
Yes, Dad, they're terrific sailors, all had boats, built their own boats. And Sunday they weren't allowed to hammer a nail or do anything with their boats while the church was going at the back, which I think they might have given the land for, I'm not sure. This is a memorial church. But yes, they owned quite a bit of land at West Shore, because the Riddles, of course, had land at the port. And Granddad had how many brothers? Had eight brothers, I think, and one sister.
And your own family?
I had Elizabeth and Meg and JB. And Elizabeth had two children, Kate and Daniel. Kate's married to Tim Wright, and they have two children, a girl and a boy, our great-grandchildren. in Christchurch, and Daniel is over in Perth, and he's an engineer over in Perth, and I don't think he'll ever come back here to New Zealand, will he, Lib?
I don't think so, no.
Anyhow, that's the way of the world these days. And Jamie has Callum and Lockie, Lachlan, as we call him, Lockie, of course, and he's in Wairoa still. Callum works in Hastings, he's a landscape gardener, and he's down there, he's 25, and Lockie's 23. And yes, and that's our family.
And Meg.
Meg's, of course, Meg's. Yep. Meg's son Alex over in Perth as well, and he's an engineer, and I don't think he'll come back because he's just bought a house there over in Perth. And Annie Brown is in Waipuk. She's
the well spread around, except for you.
Well, no, Jamie's still here. Even though the family farm has gone now, yes. He sold it. He's retained the old house, yes, with some acres around it, so he's still out at Waihua.
Well, you're going to just tell us something about your...
As in just growing up?
Yes, because we've heard the older history.
Oh, school days and that. Well, I can remember when Dad was playing rugby for Athletic and we had an old green Cortina station wagon. And I can distinctly remember being out at Mahia. Must have been playing rugby against Mahia or something. And we had a hangi. There was a hangi put down for us all. And there was always a group of us, like the fathers were playing rugby and the kids were playing and running around and everything like that. And we used to be put on a big mattress in the back of the car and would go to sleep while Dad and Mum were with everybody else living it up, and all of us
but
kids
I mean,
were in...
That was normal. Oh, we had one in our car.
Yes.
They thought this was quite normal.
Yeah, and because we were involved with the rugby, obviously remember the tennis parties at home, yes, you know, lots of community sort of gatherings for different occasions. The school we were at was Turiroa, and it was only a small country school when we were, yes, there. And we used to just do all sorts of things, really, you, yes, know, fundraising, mm, for trips and all sorts of things. But it was just like one big family. Yes. Everybody was all involved and helped and volunteered. Oh, yes, actually, Mum and Dad, you'll have to tell about the night. Was it the night I was born or something? And the rugby team was up at Rukaturi or something?
Oh,
what
was
that?
Dreadful. The annex here, or the home here in Wairoa, as they called it, just across the road, actually. It used to be with the colleges. And visiting time had gone, and these had all gone up to play rugby at Rukaturi. And well after closing time at the annex, the bus pulls up and they all come into the home. And we knew the matron, didn't we? And she shot them out of the place smartly, all as full as can be, silly as chooks. And then they came to see us mothers at the home with their babies.
But that was interesting, talking about rugby in the country. That was cold. We played uphill because that was the field. We all washed in the creek, which was absolutely frozen. They stripped the battens off the fence and lit a huge big fire in the middle of the road. We had a galvanized bucket with a tin pannikin, and the galvanized bucket went round and you dipped in and had your beer out of it, and you passed the bucket and the pannikin to the next man. It came out of a keg, but you can imagine the tin pannikin and that. And well, and then of course I'm off to the hangi afterwards.
Well, you had what, 60 odd years tied up with Athletic, and you, yes, know you just retired from being patron after 40-something years.
And that was it too, you know, the rugby and the tie-up with the football club, and it was just all
our
those.
Kids were all brought up,
yeah,
at the football club.
We were. Really? But many of the locals as such were brought up doing that. Like as a family, we all went to the rugby and here, there and everywhere.
Yes. Well, I think Cliff King played for Athletic, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah, play, yeah, for Athletic. Mm. But Lib, you went to Iona for
four
years.
Yep, that's right. I was at Iona for 4 years, and I actually got a Rotary scholarship to go to Canada as an exchange student. So I was over there when I was 17. No, through the Wairau Club. No. And I was 17 when I went over there. Came back, and Wayne, my husband and I, local boy, were married and, yeah, have our business and home here and 10 acres of land. And children were brought up here, Kate and Daniel, and went to Truro School as well. So we're sort of like third generation through the small school, which has since closed, and the Labor government's great big reshuffle and closing small rural schools.
Okay, so sporting wise?
Oh no, I'm a great armchair critic of any sport.
Oh, that's good, there's quite a few teams of those around the country.
Yes, so I enjoy that. Oh, when I was at Iona, I played tennis and swam, but no, nothing sort of since that. So that's me.
Jean Ide, what relation is she to you?
Jean is my first cousin and Marg's first cousin.
That's Rona and Selwyn.
Because she's Rona and Selwyn's daughter, and of course Selwyn is Dad's brother.
And Rona's my auntie.
And Rona's my auntie.
You're scrambling my mind.
And I usually say, because they look and wonder what's going on, and I just say, well, they're actually, you know, they've got the same auntie and uncle in common, so I figured that one out.
Well, Stony Croft had these maps, and we got talking, and initially, I said, oh, yes, I know Mackay up that road. But it was Ross Mackay.
Oh, yeah.
He's related too.
He's my cousin.
Or second cousin.
He was the head prefect at Napier Boys, and I was there.
Was he?
He met the Queen.
Go on. Yeah.
Yes, his claim to fame.
We went to the Queen when she opened the bridge, the Wairau Bridge.
That would have been in 53.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you know Bill Clark? Went to Napier Boys High?
No, he was ahead of me.
No.
You were only 83, I'm 84.
Yeah, oh well.
No, he had left, obviously, for them to, all of a sudden.
She's a great one.
Proactive.
Yes. Mm. Well, getting back to my 5 May, I was teacher's aide at Truro School 3 times because I was closest to the school of the mothers. And I think I only got, was 2 hours a week or something or other. And anyhow, I got 3 going-away presents.
Did you?
When I retired, each time I got a present. The third present, I think I'm starting to play golf, and I was playing it just about every day of the week when I could. And Bruce's father was a great golfer, and he'd take me over to the house, and we'd be and had to shoot across the gully to the dam, and he was coaching me. And I know one of the people out there said, don't for God's sake let him teach you to putt, because he had the oddest way of putting, didn't he? He stood sideways, and but anyhow, that's where I sort of used to do my long hits.
Now, Lib, you didn't say what you did.
I worked as a special needs teacher, and I've been working at Kids House, our community childcare centre, for probably about 30 years, working with children with special needs. And I also have a child I support at another centre in town called Lighthouse Kids. So I used to work full time, but I'm just now down to 3 days a week, which is just the way I like it.
That's great. Now, we're talking about the valley and all the trees. Have you been to Rotorua in the last 2 or 3 years and seen conversion of those pine trees back to the most beautiful farms?
Stunning. It's all been converted into dairy farms. It's incredible.
Just thousands of acres. Just amazing. And we will see these farms come again.
Because it must, surely to goodness, yes. If they've all been re-stumped and everything, well, they're back into production, aren't they?
So, all is not lost. Now, have you thought of anything that you've forgotten to tell me?
Find some more rallies.
I'll bring the stud book back. But you're involved with the museum, aren't you?
Yes.
I'd like to come back and have a look with someone that's familiar with it.
Oh, do that, yes. I'll arrange that with Mike, who is our curator, and we'll go.
I think you've retired from all your other posts?
Yes. I've only just retired after 43 years of being the patron of the Athletic Rugby Football Club.
Excuse me, what about your time on the hospital board.
Oh, board.
Yes, I had 9 years on the hospital board. I had Wirral when it had its hospital board, and had 3 of those years on Hawke's Bay with Sir Edwin Bates, Sir Hallam Dowling, Bert Lee was the secretary at that time, Dr. Jim Grimbleby was the medical super, and yes, I could name the rest if I went through them, but I thoroughly enjoyed that period of time. But I gave it away because Colin had died, and he was at Waiputa, which is at the old home, and I had Waitangi as well, and I took over part of Waiputa, and so I knew that there was no opportunity of me to be going to the hospital board meetings, so I retired, but I thoroughly enjoyed that, and so did Marg. We were 9 years on there, and I was with Niman, and I was also with...
Was that Joe Niman or John Niman?
He was the one that... Did they have the buses?
Yes. Well, they both... Joe was the father, and John had road air transport and the buses.
Did he?
Joe would have been older than you, I think.
Yes. Yeah, he was when I was there, and also...
Mrs. Jaffars.
Mrs. Jaffars was on, and
Pam Coburn.
Pam Coburn, she was on, and
was a bridesmaid for her.
Marg was a bridesmaid for them when they were married. Yes,
and Joan Coburn, I was a bridesmaid for her too. If you see these people, please remember me to them, because I don't write letters anymore.
I retired at 77, and I took this up, but it's wonderful. You know, where would I ever have the opportunity of sitting down with three nice people?
Who could be actually related to after all us.
If I come back, I should bring the stud book.
Yes, but fancy, you're the brother of...
No, my half-brother. Sam was Cooper. My half-brother.
I see.
Was he the one we were talking about the other day? Yeah,
he's Pat's father. Pat Cooper's father, and they lived down from Graham.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So, almost related.
Yes. Buck was hard, wasn't he? Remember when he was one of the agents and you had all your 3-year-old bullocks in the yard? You just left school?
Yes.
You tell the story, you don't need to mention names.
Anyway, Dad was selling these 3-year-old bullocks, and all of these things you took in mind, they were like a learning curve, and Dad said, bring the bullocks in, Bruce, bring the cattle, don't jam them in the yard, just bring them in. And so I did, and I brought them in, and the chap that was there, he was a Bousfield from Gisborne, and he was Ron Redmond's father-in-law, and he was a stock agent, and Ron Redmond had the farm over the hill. And he just said, these cattle were not the cattle that were quoted to me. He said, I don't think that these cattle are as good as what I've been told. Barney Williams was our agent that was selling them. He tried to talk them into taking them, and then they started to get down to a price. And of course, you didn't do that with my father, because when his mind was made up, it was made up. He said, open the gate, Bruce, and let the cattle out. Anyway, I said, oh, are you going to let them go? He said, yes, please. Just open the gate and let the cattle out. And he turned around and he said, well, gentlemen, I have brought you here. He said, to look at these cattle and to purchase them. He said, I have not brought you here to criticize them and to say what they are. You can come to the house. I will give you a drink of tea, but we will not mention the cattle again. So that was okay. They came. Oh, Buck, said Barney. Just a minute. And he said, no, come and have a cup of tea. Do you know they rang Dad that night to say they'd take the cattle and he wouldn't sell them? They rang him and they said, Buck, we've been talking about it, we want to take these cattle, we'll make arrangements with trucking and all the rest of it. And he said, no, they don't leave the property.
Good on him. Did you know Mason Horn?
Yeah.
Here we go again. Mason Horn's daughter is our daughter-in-law.
Yeah, she's married Jamie. To Jamie.
Mason Horn. Extraordinary.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And my husband used to go up there and do digger work at Rotunaio up at Pootery. Yeah. And, oh, the thing was, you know, Mason used to tell him he worked too long. He was working past the GMT hour, and Wayne would stay in the quarters up there, but he'd always have to go across to the house and have a drink with Mace. But he reckons, he had some bad nights.
You know, it's on the market again. Yeah, Rotunaio. Yeah. The guy and his wife have parted, and it's on the market again.
Did you ever fish?
No, we didn't.
You never went to the lake?
No.
Marg hated it.
I hated the lake. Mm. Not for me.
No. We did plenty of surf fishing at the Waihua Beach. We were forever down there taking lunches and going down on...
What did you catch one day, Snapper? 52.
52 off Snapper. The off the beach. Yeah. And the Maoris would come down and they'd say, oh, gee, Bruce, had a good day. And say, yes, away you go, help yourself, take what you want. If we'd go down and go fishing and they'd had a good day, go and help yourself, take what you want.
They were different days.
Yes.
Okay, look, I think this is important for Hawke's Bay, so thank you for doing it, and thanks for the contribution you've made in this little corner of the woods, because you haven't been sitting on your hands, have you?
Definitely not.
Right.